And honestly, as between really bad and catastrophic, I said to my team, we've got to walk into the world of really bad.
Oh, man. That's the way I wake up every morning.
Well, I don't know why I came here tonight. I got the feeling that something ain't right. I'm so scared in case I fall off my chair. And I'm wondering how I'll get down the stairs. Clowns to the left of me, jokers to the right. Here I am, stuck in the middle with you.
Yep.
Yes, I'm stuck.
From Pacifica Radio in Los Angeles, this is The Bradcast, as heard on KPFK 90.7 FM in L.A. and Radio Sputnik, blanketing planet Earth 5 days a week. I'm Brad Friedman, your friendly investigative blogger, journalist, troublemaker, muckraker, all-around swell fellow, says me, if not you, from bradblog.com. Thank you for joining us today for another thrilling action-packed adventure that we call The Bradcast. We are live today in the studios here in at KPFK in newly sweltering Los Angeles, which means it might be a good chance to take your calls. Yes, your calls. What we discussed yesterday, I had brought this up at the end of the show that maybe we'd take some of your calls on this. Progressive readers of the New York Times have been canceling their subscriptions in response to the hiring of a climate science denier. Is that a good idea? Not the hiring the climate science denier part, but the canceling your subscriptions to the New York Times. Is it in this Trump era? I don't know. You can give me a call on that. Also, FBI Director James Comey was back on the hot seat on Wednesday in the Senate Intel Committee regarding his investigation last year into Hillary Clinton's email server and the ongoing investigation into the Trump campaign's alleged collusion with Russia prior to the election last year. Got thoughts on any of the above? Well, get in line. Our phone number is 818-985-5735, 818-985-5735. If you have thoughts on that. Also coming up in the show, Desi Doyen and the Green News Report. Hi, Des.
Hey.
A lot, actually, in today's Green News Report.
Yes, we do try.
Including rolling back, which is just amazing to me. Trump's now rolling back the oil spill safety regulations that were put in place after the BP oil spill.
Yeah, because who really needs safety regulations now, right?
What could possibly go wrong? If you want to talk about any of that, too, 818-985-KPFK. Des, also, we're beginning to get word now that the administration, the Trump administration, is looking to pull out of the Paris Agreement, the landmark Paris Agreement, the largest international agreement ever struck there.
Yep.
to curb greenhouse gases around the globe. They're looking now to get out of it.
Yes.
Despite the fact that, as you have reported, when the agreement was signed or put into effect last year, there is a 4-year period before anyone can pull out of that agreement,
right?
Correct?
So as part of the negotiated agreement, and remember, this is not a treaty. This is just an agreement. It's entirely voluntary. We signed it in December of 2015 under the Barack Obama administration. So there are two mechanisms that they can use, the Trump administration can use to exit the agreement. One, as you mentioned, is the 4-year plan where they can, within 3 years from now, mm-hmm. is the first opportunity they would have to announce that they wish to exit the agreement, and then it would take another year before that would actually take effect. So that's the 4-year version, but there is also a 1-year option, and that's the one that's really, I think, the most damaging to the United States' international standing. Of course, pulling out of the agreement at all is going to be really damaging
right.
to the U.S. and especially our leadership in the world. However, the 1 year would require the United States to withdraw from the original framework convention that was signed in the United Nations.
This is the UN convention that
was— Yes, on climate change.
On climate change that was entered into—
In 1992, 25 years ago. So it
wow.
would take a 1 year process to exit the entire framework convention. And that would be really a big deal
and
for
that
the
would,
U.S. to do that.
That would remove not only our seat at the table on the Paris, the specific on the Paris Agreement, but But that would take us out of
everything that has to do
UN
with
climate.
Anything.
Yeah.
Right, including, you know, the Montreal protocols that dealt with the acid rain and with the ozone hole. All of those things would also take us out of those. So, you know, part of the issue seems to be within the White House, there are two factions. The faction that wants to stay in is State Department, Secretary of State Rex Tillerson and a few others. There's also Scott Pruitt, the EPA administrator, however, wants to exit the agreement because he feels like the wording of the agreement will make it more difficult for him to kill off climate policies that are right now in the courts and headed to the Supreme Court.
No doubt. We will be watching that this week. Boy, you'd really have to be an uninformed jerk to pull out of that treatment.
To pull out of the Paris Agreement?
So I don't think that could possibly happen. Not just the Paris Agreement, but the entire UN framework
for
climate would be extraordinary. But don't be surprised. We'll be watching that story as we move forward. Looking backward for a moment, yesterday on the broadcast, as noted, we discussed with the Philadelphia Daily News' Will Bunch. He was my guest, and we talked about the question about the New York Times' latest op-ed page hire. This is a guy by the name of Brett Stevens. He's a right-winger, a former Wall Street Journal columnist. He's an anti-Trumper, but he is also a longtime climate science denier. Now, this hire of this guy, Brett Stevens, comes after the New York Times has seen a big bump in subscriptions to the paper during the Trump era. They've been running an expensive ad campaign highlighting, quote unquote, the truth as being more important now than ever. But then they go out and they hire this guy who denies the science of climate change. And he filed his first column over the weekend, charging that because pre-election polls about Hillary Clinton winning last year turned out to be wrong. By the way, they weren't all that wrong. But nonetheless, he cites that as reason why we should be wildly skeptical about all of this scientific data, finding that the globe is warming and that it will lead to more and more great dangers in the near future. So in response, many progressives are reportedly jamming the New York Times phone lines to cancel their subscriptions over the weekend. But is it smart? Is it ultimately smart, or is it self-defeating, since the New York Times reporting, whether you like it or not, is very important? And in most cases, most, but certainly not all cases, it is good, including their climate science reporting has been, both excellent and important. Here's a little bit of my conversation with Will Bunch yesterday.
The Brett Stevens first column that caused so much controversy, it really wasn't that much about climate. It was really about don't trust experts. And, I mean, to me, the irony of that was just incredible because, as you may have seen in these expensive ads that the New York Times produced, and it's all about the truth, you know, and how the truth is more important than ever. This is who we are post the election of Trump, you know, that now that Trump is president, the truth is under fire, but we do the hard work to give you the truth. And meanwhile, oh, by the way, we went out and just hired this guy who, you know, thinks the truth is a bunch of crap, basically, you know. And whatever those people subscribed to the New York Times for, it wasn't to read Brett Stevens, I can tell you that. It wasn't to read climate science denial.
On the other hand, Will, you know, because I'm looking at this, I'm wondering, you know, if this is the journalistic hill that progressives ought to die on. Yes, he's a denier, and I don't want to be one of those concern trolls, Will. But, you know, I wonder if progressives end up hurting the paper more than they actually help it, you know, by pulling their subscriptions at this point.
Oh, yeah, right. Well, I mean, the bottom line, I want the New York Times to succeed.
That was my a little part of my conversation with Will Bunch of the Philadelphia Daily News, the great attitude blogger. You can hear that entire conversation. Download yesterday's broadcast at bradblog.com or your favorite iTunes site. I'm sorry, podcast site like iTunes, for example. So do you have a New York Times subscription? If so, why? If so, did you cancel your subscription over the Brett Stevens issue? If so, why? So is it smart to cancel over this? Is it smart to take a piece out of the New York Times right now? Is this a hill worth progressives dying on, as I said to Will Bunch? I mean, if it ends up harming the New York Times' ability to cover the news and indeed climate change, is that a good idea? to massively curtail the subscription income that is received by the New York Times in this sort of a boycott? I don't know. So I'd love to hear from you on that, 818-985-5735. You can also tweet me if you like. I am the Brad Blog. I will try to keep my eyes on the Twitters as we go. Speaking of what's smart for progressives or not, you know what? I got a bunch of election news, a bunch of stories that actually we're working on that I'll save most of this for later in the week. We'll be covering some news on the upcoming Georgia special election for the U.S. House and some important news on the mess that we've been seeing of late. When it comes to voting at all in Maricopa County, Arizona, that's Phoenix. But Ryan Grimm had this, what he calls a little scoop. The DCCC, the Democratic Congressional Campaign Committee, is pumping another $400,000, almost $500,000 into the Montana special election to back bluegrass legend folk singer Rob Quist up there, who's running as a Democrat. A progressive Democrat in Montana, $400,000 to pay for TV ads and encourage people to to return their mail-in ballots. Ryan Grimm of Huffington Post says this tells us one of two things. Either A, the DCCC is willing to respond to public pressure to back progressive candidates running even in long shot races, which they did not do in Kansas a few weeks ago. You'll recall our coverage of that. Or B, they think that he has a real shot of winning. Or it could be both. The Montana election is May 25. I know that the Republicans are very concerned about it because the statewide, the election officials there and the state legislature had planned to run an all mail-in election for this. Montana has just one congressional district, so it's essentially a statewide race, and they had actually planned to send ballots to everyone, at least until the head of the Republican Party, the state Republican Party, freaked out about that, said, no, if we send ballots to everyone and everyone gets to vote, the Democrat will win. So they have changed that plan. They're forcing people to actually go to the precincts, which, to be honest, I prefer, but it's easier to oversee balloting and so forth. But this is a sign that the Republicans are quite concerned about what could happen in Montana. And it's a suggestion that the Democrats, $500,000, that's a lot of money for a U.S. House race, that they are at least in some fashion optimistic about what could go on in Montana. Anyway, more on some of these other elections as we move forward this week. In the meantime, Hillary Clinton on Tuesday, speaking at the Women for Women International event in New York, delivered her most forceful critique of the Donald Trump 2016 victory to date. And she took both personal responsibility for her failed campaign, but also pointed to the timing of the October 28th letter from FBI Director James Comey concerning the FBI's brief reopening of the investigation into her use of a private email server while she was Secretary of State. That investigation, which ended once again on the weekend just before the election, found no new emails of concern and did not result in any charges. In any event, she cited that moment on October 28th, and also she cited Russian interference in the election as factors in her loss.
It wasn't a perfect campaign. There is no such thing. But I was on the way to winning until the combination of Jim Comey's letter on October 28th and Russian WikiLeaks raised doubts in the minds of people who were inclined to vote for me but got scared off. As Nate Silver, who, you know, doesn't work for me, he's an independent analyst, but one considered to be very reliable, you know, has concluded, you know, if the election had been on October 27th, I'd be your president. So, did we make mistakes? Of course we did. Did I make mistakes? Oh my gosh, yes. You know, you'll read my confession and my request for absolution. But the reason why I believe we lost were the intervening events in the last 10 days.
That was Hillary Clinton speaking on Tuesday. And please do note, she also blamed herself. She wasn't only blaming Comey. She blamed herself for the loss pretty no uncertain terms, I should say. Since some today, this including the abhorrent Texas Republican Senator John Cornyn in the Senate Intelligence Committee hearing with FBI Director Jim Comey, I'll get to in a moment. Senator Cornyn was falsely charging that Hillary Clinton blamed everyone but herself. That is blatantly false. Now, you can blame whoever you like, and I'll take your calls on that as well, 818-985-5735. But to say she blamed everyone but herself is just false. All right, today, during that public testimony before the U.S. Senate Intelligence Committee, the FBI director spoke about that October 27th letter that he sent to Congress and his decision process in making it, deciding whether to send that letter. It was his most detailed explanation to date for taking that action, which many Democrats, including Hillary Clinton, still cite as one of the determinant reasons for Hillary Clinton's loss on November 8 last year. Comey said that the notion that his decision helped change the course of the election still makes him, quote, mildly nauseous. But he stands by the decision, said he would do it again. And so let me play some of that testimony. This is in the Senate on Wednesday, and I'll take your calls on this, in which the FBI director describes the choice between really bad and catastrophic options that he saw when he decided to inform lawmakers about the discovery of additional Clinton emails that were found on the computer of former Congressman Anthony Weiner, the husband of Clinton's top aide, Huma Abedin. Here's Comey's explanation in response to California Democratic Senator Dianne Feinstein.
Why was it necessary to announce 11 days before a presidential election that you were opening an investigation on a new computer without any knowledge of what was in that computer? Why didn't you just do the investigation as you would normally, with no public announcement?
Yeah, great question, Senator. Thank you. October 27th, the investigative team that had finished the investigation in July, focused on Secretary Clinton's emails, asked to meet with me. So I met with them that morning, late morning, in my conference room, and they laid out for me what they could see from the metadata on this fella Anthony Weiner's laptop that had been seized in an unrelated case. What they could see from the metadata was that there were thousands of Secretary Clinton's emails on that device, including what they thought might be the missing emails from her first 3 months as Secretary of State. We never found any emails from her first 3 months. She was using a Verizon BlackBerry then, and that's obviously very important. Yeah. Because if there was evidence that she was acting with bad intent, that's where it would be in the
but
first 3 months.
But they weren't there.
Look, can I just finish my answer, Senator?
Yeah.
And so they came in and said, we can see thousands of emails from the Clinton email domain, including many, many, many from the Verizon Clinton domain, BlackBerry domain. They said, we think we got to get a search warrant to go get these. And the Department of Justice agreed we had to go get a search warrant. So I agreed. I authorized them to seek a search warrant. And then I faced a choice. And I've lived my entire career by the tradition that if you can possibly avoid it, you avoid any action in the run-up to an election that might have an impact, whether it's a dog-catcher election or president of the United States. But I sat there that morning, and I could not see a door labeled no action here. I could see two doors, and they were both actions. One was labeled speak, the other was labeled conceal. Because here's how I thought about it. I'm not trying to talk you into this, but I want you to know my thinking. Having repeatedly told this Congress, we are done and there's nothing there, there's no case there, there's no case there, to restart in a hugely significant way, potentially finding the emails that would reflect on her intent from the beginning, and not speak about it would require an act of concealment, in my view. And so I stared at speak and conceal. Speak would be really bad. There's an election in 11 days. Lordy, that would be really bad. Concealing, in my view, would be catastrophic, not just to the FBI, but well beyond. And honestly, as between really bad and catastrophic, I said to my team, we've got to walk into the world of really bad. I've got to tell Congress that we're restarting this, not in some frivolous way, in a hugely significant way. And the team also told me, we cannot finish this work before the election. And then they worked night after night after night, and they found thousands of new emails. They found classified information on Anthony Weiner. Somehow, her emails are being forwarded to Anthony Weiner, including classified information by her assistant, Huma Abedin. And so they found thousands of new emails and then called me the Saturday night before the election and said, thanks to the wizardry of our technology, we've only had to personally read 6,000. We think we can finish tomorrow morning, Sunday. And so I met with them. And they said, we found a lot of new stuff. We did not find anything that changes our view of her intent. So we're in the same place we were in July. It hasn't changed our view. And I asked them lots of questions. And I said, okay, if that's where you are, then I also have to tell Congress that we're done. Look, this was terrible. It makes me mildly nauseous to think that we might have had some impact on the election. But honestly, it wouldn't change the decision. Everybody who disagrees with me has to come back to October 28th with me and stare at this and tell me what you would do. Would you speak or would you conceal? And I could be wrong, but we honestly made a decision between those two choices that even in hindsight, and this has been one of the world's most painful experiences, I would make the same decision. I would not conceal that on October 28th from the Congress. And I sent a letter to Congress. By the way, people forget this. I didn't make a public announcement. I sent a private letter to the chairs and the rankings of the oversight committees. Did I know it's a distinction without a difference in the world of leaks, but it was very important that I tell them instead of concealing. And reasonable people can disagree, but that's the reason I made that choice. And it was a hard choice. I still believe in retrospect the right choice, as painful as this has been.
So that was James Comey speaking to the Senate U.S. Senate Intelligence Committee on Wednesday, describing his choice to either speak or conceal, as he framed it, decisions that he described as either really bad or catastrophic. He took the really bad one. Do you accept that explanation from Jim Comey? If so, or if not, you can give me a call, 818-985-5735. We'll take a break shortly and come back with your calls. Comey's appearance before the Senate Intelligence Committee today, this comes one day after both President Donald Trump dismissed what he described as phony ties between his campaign and Moscow, and Clinton's partially blaming Comey and his handling of the investigation for her loss. Trump tweeted, I think this was yesterday, FBI Director Comey was the best thing that ever happened to Hillary Clinton in that it gave her a free pass for many bad deeds. He went on to tweet, the phony Trump-Russia story was an excuse for the Democrats as justification for losing the election. Perhaps Trump just ran a great campaign? Donald Trump tweeted on Tuesday. Is that what happened? He just ran a great campaign? Is this just an excuse? Give me a call. Senator Feinstein then went on to press Comey about his consideration about how this action would have an effect on the election. Now, that's something that has long been in violation of the Department of Justice's procedures concerning criminal investigations and indictments just prior to an election. Feinstein asked Jim Comey about that.
You took an enormous gamble. The gamble was that there was something there that would invalidate her candidacy. And there wasn't. So one has to look at that action and say, did it affect the campaign? And I think most people who have looked at this say, yes, it did affect the campaign. Why would he do it? And was there any conflict among your staff, people saying do it, people saying don't do it, as has been reported?
No, there was a great debate. I have a fabulous staff at all levels, and one of my junior lawyers said, should you consider that what you're about to do may help elect Donald Trump president? And I said, thank you for raising that, not for a moment, because down that path lies the death of the FBI as an independent institution in America. I can't consider for a second whose political fortunes will be affected in what way. We have to ask ourselves, what is the right thing to do? And then do that thing. I'm very proud of the way we debated it. And at the end of the day, everyone on my team agreed we have to tell Congress that we are restarting this in a hugely significant way.
Once again, that was Jim Comey, FBI director in the U.S. Intelligence Committee, Senate Intelligence Committee. So with hindsight, do you accept Comey's explanation? Or do you, like many Democrats, still hold James Comey responsible for Clinton's loss, at least to some extent? Should he have also announced that the FBI had just begun an investigation into whether members of the Trump campaign were colluding with Russia in some way to undermine the presidential election? Comey has said that the investigation, that investigation is continuing, but that it had just started last year, so it wouldn't have been appropriate to say anything about it. That's what he basically said today during the hearings in the Senate. And I should note, the investigation into her private email server was then closed, reclosed, I guess, just before the election. No charges of any type have ever been brought. So I'd love your calls on that. I know the lines are already filling up, so we'll get to a break. Also, your calls on what's going on at the New York Times, where they've hired a climate science denier for their op-ed pages, albeit a Pulitzer Prize-winning one. Is canceling subscriptions the right way to send a message to the failing New York Times? All of that, the Green News Report, your calls, and much more straight ahead. I'm Brad Friedman. This is your Bradcast. Don't go away. Hey, it's Brad, and you're listening to the Bradcast on Radio Sputnik. Welcome back to the Bradcast. Give me a call if you like. 818-985-5735. 818-985-5735. Brad Friedman from bradblog.com with you here. Let me get straight. Well, you know what? Let's just get straight to these calls, because there's a lot of people who want to ring in, both on what's going on at the New York Times, hiring a climate science denier, and on Jim Comey's testimony concerning Hillary Clinton, her email server, the 2016 election, Donald Trump, all of that. Let's go to Mike in Upland. Hey, Mike, welcome to the Bradcast, sir.
Hi, Brad. How are you today?
I'm okay.
So I'm calling about the New York Times.
Yeah.
I subscribed a few months ago, and I read this about Brad Stevens, and so I'm kind of dealing with my own conscience. Should I go ahead and drop it? But I just wanted to call to remind us all that the New York Times has never quite been the paragon of journalistic integrity. I might remind us about the Iraq War and Judith Miller.
Yeah. Listen, I've been very critical, as we discussed on yesterday's show, of the New York Times over the years. So that's why I'm sort of conflicted on this. The work they do is important. Our ability to criticize them is also important. So I don't know if canceling is the right thing or not. You've got a subscription. Are you gonna cancel it, or are you gonna hang on to it, Mike?
I haven't decided. I just thought your program was interesting, because here I am kind of in the state. I really decided to subscribe to them because I wanted to get a mainstream view about Donald Trump, and they seem to be pretty close, perhaps for self-interest reasons of giving to Trump a little bit. But on the other hand, when I see this Brad Stevens, I just think, man, that's the old New York Times.
Well, yeah, it is, this this fake balance thing. And by the way, it's Brett Stevens, right? Not Brad Stevens.
Oh.
We got to be careful about mixing up our Brads, particularly not just because it's the Bradcast, but also because the New York Times has recently hired Brad Plumer for their environment desk. He's been on our show before. He's an excellent reporter on climate issues, and they do important reporting. So yeah, I'm of a mixed mind, and you're not helping, Mike. But I appreciate.
You aren't either.
All right.
Program, I appreciate it.
Thanks, Mike. I appreciate your call. 818-985-5735. Let's go to Soren in Long Beach. Hey, Soren, welcome to the Bradcast.
Hey, Brad. Thank you very much. Appreciate what you do.
Thank you.
I just had a comment about the framing, you know, just in the way that you said, you know, oh, may I remind you that Hillary, in no uncertain terms, you know, she's also blaming herself. Mm-hmm. I just find that untrue. I can't square that with her saying flat out, we were on the way to winning when blah, 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 James Comey 10 days before. It seems to me that she's trying to have it both ways and only really paying lip service to taking any portion of blame. Does that make sense?
Your opinion, of course, makes sense. She was very clear, I thought, that she took responsibility for what happened. And the reason I pointed it out is because you had Republicans in the Senate lying about her not taking responsibility. So I wanted to be clear about that. But beyond that, look, this is math. Basically, if you look at the numbers, if you trust, and this is up to you, but if you trust the pre-election polling, if you look at that, there was a great big dip that occurred at exactly the same time, just after James Comey made this announcement. So yes, she was on her way to winning, again, if you believe the polls, and then there was a big turn in the numbers following that announcement. That's what she was referring to. I think that's fair framing. It's up to you whether you think she's, you know, right or not, or who's ultimately to blame. But I don't think that was unfair framing. You disagree?
You know, well, you know, I just can't square it. I mean, I just don't think she is taking that responsibility. And I think that's paramount right now because the Democratic, she's so emblematic of the Democratic establishment that made, to me, the fatal mistake of forcing her through when she was clearly vulnerable, you know what I mean? But that's a conversation we've all had a lot. You know what I wish a lot of outlets would do, and you've been great about having them on and covering the content, she should be talking about the kind of things that Greg Palast has reported on. You know, nobody, it's like we got to sit here and try to come to terms with the fact that, yeah, like after decades of public life and all of the polarizing, you know, like deeply entrenched camped opinions about Hillary Clinton, we're to believe that stupid James Comey's letter 10 days before the election somehow swayed an election.
Well, it's
whatever the polls say.
Yeah.
I think that is probably has more to do with how the polls were conducted, how they were framed vis-a-vis that letter and 538 with Nate Silver and everything, she's citing them.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, they had their moment in the sun, I think, you know, with the election of Barack Obama, but they were getting it wrong left and right in during the primaries.
Okay.
And, you know, so I don't buy it.
I don't find
Silver anymore in either.
Okay, fair enough. I don't see, and thanks for the call, Soren. I appreciate it. I don't see them having gotten it that terribly wrong. If you look at their numbers, they were not that terribly wrong. What they were wrong on was the probability, this probability, oh, she's got a 80, 90% chance of winning or however they come up with that number. But as far as what the polls actually said, the final results, as reported, if you believe the final results as reported, were pretty close to what they were reporting the pre-election polls to be within that margin of error. Anyway, let me get more of your thoughts, not mine. Let me go to Michael in Claremont, who may agree with Soren. Hey, Michael, welcome to the broadcast.
Hey, how are you doing?
I'm okay.
I appreciate you taking my call. I can't say that I necessarily agree with him, but I'm going to take it in a completely different direction. It's a beaten horse, but I still carry two bumper stickers on my car that agree with this position I'll take. Hillary Clinton lost the election before the primaries, when she literally did everything in her power, she and the DNC, to marginalize the Bernie Sanders and the burner movement. When they did that, the Democratic Party showed that they were not that far misaligned from the Republicans, the Tea Partiers, and the denizens of that party. They showed the voting public, folks who literally could have either voted or stayed home, that, quite frankly, a vote to the right or to the left was not that far off. Now, in hindsight, we see Donald Trump and we see the things that he's created and the things that he's done and what it stands for. But I said to my wife before the election, and I said that if Donald Trump won, which I knew was a definite possibility, especially against the likes of Hillary Clinton, I said that at the very least, it would awaken the activistic spirit in the United States that had not been seen since the 1970s and the Vietnam War era.
Yeah.
It has come to pass. It is the most incredible thing that I think we could have seen. If Hillary Clinton did win, all of the women's movement would be silenced.
You know,
the entirety.
I
take your point, and we talked about this before the election as well. I take your point. That said, there are real consequences. They're talking about they're still trying to pass this Republican health care bill, which will knock 20 million people basically off the rolls when it comes to health care. I was reading on Twitter, Senator Bob Casey of Pennsylvania putting out an urgent notice about a woman and her five-year-old child who are being deported today back to, I think it was Guatemala, where they had witnessed a murder, so they fled because they are, you know, likely to be killed as witnesses, and yet they are being put back on a plane today. So it's fine to say, and I understand the thinking that, hey, you know, this really got everyone, you know, the activist spirits, got people marching on the streets, and I'm really happy to see that. But it comes at a very expensive cost. And I'm glad, Michael, that you are one of the people who are not going to have to pay that price. But a lot of people will and are. And so I don't know. I agree with much of what the rest of what you had to say. But we all saw this coming with Trump and the cost that it was going to be. And I don't know. I have a hard time saying it's all for the best. Yeah.
Would it be okay to interject? I mean, you look at the concept of Hillary Clinton, and you look at Obama. Obama was once considered to be the deporter-in-chief, deported more folks than any other president before him. And so you look at where the Democratic Party was going. We were in cahoots, and we literally were the party of the lesser evil, but evil none the same. Hillary Clinton called the young African-Americans, such as myself, super predators. She was forced through just the general kids just walking in front of her and forcing themselves on her to speak out and say that, hey, she might even consider to take a look at Black Lives Matter and the concepts that we have. We all saw those videos. So, granted, would we have a president that was as flashy and as, you know, just asinine as Donald Trump? No. But we still would have had a president that sits back and wheels and deals, and everyone would just sit back and drink whatever she was putting before us.
All right. Thanks, Mike. Yeah, I appreciate that call, Michael. Yeah, thank you. Let me get on to some other callers here. I'll only say that super predator comment, for whatever it's worth, was around 1990, just to make sure it's in context. Not an apology for Hillary Clinton, just trying to put it all in context, and you make some excellent points. Thanks, Michael. I appreciate it. Let me get to, Tracy in Calabasas. Hey, Tracy, is this our old friend Lady Cab Driver?
Yes, Brad. Long time no hear, no talk to. Been listening to you guys for the last few weeks, though.
Oh, good.
I'm like, well, today I had to call.
Okay, good.
Because that call me.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. And just the fact that he was so, you know, I was mildly, you know, nauseated, and he, you know, I was waiting for him to clutch his pearls. For God's sake.
You're not buying it. You're not buying his explanation about what he did.
I'm not, you know, because all that is all well and good, sweetie, but the problem what I'm having issue with, because you had information on Trump that he was in, that he was possibly colluding with Russia, that our elections could have been possibly hacked by Russia. So you didn't think that was important, but email.
Well, to be fair, we didn't have the there is a suspicion. There is a suspicion. That's why they've opened up this investigation into his campaign people. Well, it's different.
To be fair, I
try to be fair all around. So
I try to be fair, too.
Yeah.
But it's just the way he's saying, you know, all this emphasis on her email.
Yeah.
And I'm not a Hillary fan by any shape, form, or fashion. You know, I'm kind of down with my young brother, except for the fact that, you know, with the super predators and all that. And yes, she said it in 1990, but she never walked it back in 2016.
Mm-hmm.
I never heard an apology about it. So, and you never said that maybe we should do something about that horrible, you know, the welfare bill and the criminal bill, you know, so we never heard anything about what we're going to do about that. And if she maybe maybe those are part of those mistakes that she made. Maybe, as she said, maybe we should make sure that, you know, brown and black people, if they do commit a crime that's drug related, maybe, you know, they still should be able to get financial aid and whatnot and so forth.
So to cut to the chase, Trace, you're basically saying that you're no fan of Hillary Clinton's, but you don't buy Jim Comey was selling today on Capitol Hill.
I don't buy what he had to say. And one quick thing about the New York Times thing.
Yeah.
You know, don't cut off your nose to spite your face, because this guy is just, what did you say, he's an op-ed person?
Yeah.
So that gives you a chance to write in and debate this person, right?
Yep.
To give, you know, to say, you know what, okay, you're a climate change denier and all that. That's all well and good, but we have facts also. So for, you know...
No, we have facts. We have facts exclusively. He's making up facts. That is a difference. Tracy,
right.
Really good to hear from you. Thank you for calling in. Keep listening. I got to get on to a few more folks here, but I really appreciate the call. Good hearing from you. Thanks, Tracy.
Good hearing from you too, sweetheart.
You bet. Thanks. All right, let's go to George in, where are we here? George in Coarse Gold. Hey, George, welcome to the broadcast.
Hi, Brad. Boy, your callers have really hit on some of the points I was going to make. I thought, you know, like a lot of people, I bought the PR about Comey that, you know, he saved us from when they tried to go to Ashcroft's hospital room and get him to sign papers that would authorize the wiretapping.
During the Bush era, yeah, during the George W. Bush era, yeah.
And Comey was acting attorney general, and so he was supposed to be a hero in that case, but that performance he did today was so phony. It was so rehearsed. And he was filibustering. That's what they do. They try to use up all the Democratic senators' time with these long, drawn-out explanations and how nauseated he felt.
Wow.
Oh, come on.
All right.
This guy's a liar. And the whole deal with the New York City FBI office and Giuliani conspiring to release information about the Democrats and Hillary Clinton, who I'm not a fan of, was... You know, it goes to show. It's like in Greg Palast's book, Best Democracy Money Can Buy. I'm reading about all these states, red states, attorney generals and election officials closing the doors, locking out any Democrats while they fix the election results in Alabama against Don Siegelman. And in state after state, these guys are playing to kill us.
Thanks.
It's not funny.
No, I agree. It is not funny, and I appreciate the call, George. It is not funny, and this is one of the reasons why I was warning about Donald Trump. Whatever you think of Hillary Clinton, where this country is headed is very, very alarming, certainly under Donald Trump. And yeah, Comey did talk about the fact that there is supposedly an investigation into the New York FBI office right now and those leaks, alleged leaks to Rudy Giuliani. Do I have time for one more up here? Let me get to Tina in L.A. Hey, Tina, welcome to the broadcast.
Hi, Brad. Thank you for taking my call.
Sure.
I'm going to attempt to be quick here. First of all, I live near an oil refinery and harbor here in L.A., okay?
Mm-hmm.
And I've come sick because of it. I'm literally dying right now because of, in 2011, the Fukushima Daiichi plant, the plumes from the radioactive waste came over, and now I'm dying of thyroid cancer and some other cancers as a result. What I believe is that we as citizens, the millions of us with health care, without health care, but we as citizens should be literally House of Representatives, our president, the Senate, anybody who is voting against climate policies, deregulation. If the president will not go to Paris and participate in climate summits, we should actually be suing our government for attempted murder or attempted negligent homicide, because we have a right to breathe clean air, eat quality food, have clean water, and not die as a result of this. I'm not going to make it. I don't know how much time I have. However, we as citizens need to rise up and make them accountable. If they're not going to vote for quality air for us that we are paying for, we are paying for them to kill us. We need to stand up and literally fight for it. I mean, we need to be in the street, shut down this system, because like I said, it's time. What are we going to do? I feel like I'm a fish out of the bowl sometimes. It's terrible to breathe.
Well, thanks, Tina. I appreciate that call. I'm sorry to hear that news. You're doing the right thing, though, in making noise, in raising hell. As far as, you know, suing these politicians, there's actually some children, I think, are suing. That's in the U.S., right, Des? That lawsuit?
Yeah, that's the group called Our Children's Trust is a nonprofit law firm that's representing 21 children under the age of 21 right now who are all pushing the United States and in their state governments as well to act on climate change as a lawsuit.
All right, we got to take a quick break. We'll come back. I'll try to get to some more of your calls, so hang in there if you're on the line. We got to do the Green News Report, and I'll try to get to as many calls as I can. Boy, lots to talk about today for a change. Quick break, and we're back with more Bradcast and Desi Doyen in the Green News Report. I'm Brad Friedman. Don't go away. Hey, this is Brad, and you're listening to the Bradcast on Radio Sputnik. Oh, hello, Desi Doyen. Melting for you. Oh, we gotta get your mic there. Did we have Des' mic?
Yeah, hello, I'm here now.
That's better. Oh, boy.
Lots of stuff going on.
One of those days, isn't it?
Oh, it always is.
It has been for a long time, for some odd reason, particularly since November 8th. But even before that, even in the months leading up to that. All right, well, speaking of November 8th and what has come of it since, let's get to it. Our late, and we'll try to get back to some of your calls if I have any time at the end of this, but our latest Green News Report.
I'm here to make a statement about the stupidity of denying climate change.
The People's Climate March draws hundreds of thousands in the sweltering heat. Trump's EPA deletes climate change from its website. Last-minute government funding deal ignores Trump's proposed environmental cuts. Largest electric utility in Iowa to go 100% renewable. Plus,
this executive order starts the process of opening offshore areas to job-creating energy exploration.
Trump rolls back oil spill safety regulations implemented after the BP Gulf oil disaster.
All of those disasters and more straight ahead from bradblog.com. I'm Brad Friedman.
And I'm Desi Doyen.
Stand by for 6 minutes of independent green news, politics, analysis, and snarky comment.
We talk about Assad gassing people. We're gassing them, too. We're just doing it slower with CO2.
Ouch. This is your Green News Report. Okay, Desi Doyen, it seems only appropriate that we would have record-breaking heat at the end of April on the day that the people are marching for climate.
Yes, yes, it does. It was a massive People's Climate March that flooded the streets of Washington, D.C. on a sweltering Saturday. Official estimates put it at about 200,000 people, larger than the March for Science and a certain president's inauguration. In D.C. and nearly 400 sister marches around the country, the Climate March united a broad spectrum of environmental groups, Native American, labor, and racial justice organizations demanding action on climate change and blasting the Trump administration's aggressive anti-environment cutbacks on the 100th day of his presidency.
If something isn't done, the stakes are enormous because they're talking about more pollution that's going to put more pollution in the air, like arsenic and mercury, and in our water, and that affects the air our kids breathe and the water they drink.
The organizers of the Climate March say the goal now is to rally the public to defend pollution protections and spur voters to vote for climate hawk candidates in the 2018 congressional elections. As you mentioned, the day of the march tied the record for the hottest April 29th in D.C. history. But worse, the night before the march, a significant temperature record was broken when overnight temperatures failed to cool down and drop below 70 degrees. Mm. That's the first time that's ever happened in any April in the District of Columbia. The day before the climate march, President Donald Trump signed an executive order to expand offshore drilling in Arctic and Atlantic regions previously protected by President Obama. But that order also rolled back safety regulations on offshore drilling that were put in place after the BP oil disaster in the Gulf.
Because, of course, it did.
Yep, that was the worst in the nation's history.
The executive order or the BP oil spill?
That's a good question. Trump's order also explicitly removed Native American tribes in Alaska from their seat on the Bering Sea Advisory Council.
Yeah, well, remember, he's a big fan of Andrew Jackson, who didn't like Native Americans either.
Nope. The night before the march, the Trump administration's Environmental Protection Agency deleted nearly all references to climate change from its website, including info on the causes and impacts of climate change that have been in place since 1997. The site now says it's being updated to remove outdated information and will be rewritten to reflect the agency's new direction under President Trump, and that removing the information was necessary to prevent confusion.
Outdated information, eh?
Yeah. The Interior Department also quietly stripped its pages of information on climate change and its impact on public lands.
Hey, if it's not on the website, it didn't happen.
Meanwhile, a deal reached in Congress late Sunday night to avoid a shutdown and fund the government through September does not contain drastic budget cuts proposed by the Trump administration.
Does not contain?
Nope. The EPA gets a 1% budget cut, but no staff cuts. If Trump signs the deal, budget increases are in store for the National Parks Service, NOAA, and the Department of Energy's Renewable Energy and Energy Efficiency Programs.
But I thought Donald Trump was insisting on a 30% cut to the EPA.
Oh, he still is. That will just have to wait until later.
So sad.
Plus, some good news, the deal also extends permanent funding for retired coal miners' health care. In Ohio, the company that owns the controversial Dakota Access Pipeline, Energy Transfer Partners, reported spilling 2 million gallons of drilling fluids into two Ohio wetlands in the process of constructing a 700-mile pipeline. The Ohio EPA says the spilled drilling fluid isn't exactly toxic, but the sheer volume of 2 million gallons could affect water chemistry and potentially suffocate wildlife. Finally, some good news. The largest electric utility in Iowa is going 100% renewable. MidAmerica Energy is investing $2 billion to build more than 1,000 new wind turbines with the goal of generating 100% of its electricity from clean sources within 2 years. The CEO says wind energy keeps electricity rates down because, quote, the beauty of wind is there's no fuel costs.
Way to go, Iowa, for much more on all of these stories and the ones we couldn't get to. Check out our website at greennews.bradblog.com. Find us, follow us, and share us on the Facebooks and the Twitters at Green News Report. I'm Brad Friedman.
And I'm Desi Doyen.
And this has been your Green News Report.
Iowa.
I guess I couldn't come up with any lyrics for that, huh? Seems like cheating. Thank you very much, Desi Doyen. Let me see if I can clear as many of these calls as I can very quickly. Let's fly through. Let's get to Bob and Gardena. Oh, no, wrong. Let me try. There we go. Bob and Gardena, welcome to the broadcast. Sir, you got about 30 seconds. What's up?
Thank you, Brad. Of course, I don't expect Hillary or any Democratic politician to bring up the three states where the where was never a recount. I don't think Jill got her money back on that one either. And as you know, we don't exactly have a Democratic election process, and we don't need the Russians to help with that because Jim Crow policies like voter suppression and criminal lists and the Dayball-type machines are still there.
Yes, they are. And you're talking about Wisconsin, Pennsylvania, and Michigan. I remember them well. Thanks, Bob. I appreciate that call. Let me see if I can get another Bob. Robert in Bell Gardens. Go. You got 30 seconds.
Hi, Brad.
Hi, Robert.
Basically, what I would suggest is that it is in the best interest of the United States of America and the world to re-legalize marijuana, the beneficial, versatile, historically legal marijuana, cannabis, hemp, plant. The specific re-legalization reasons I would state and would be prepared to discuss are freedom of thought, First Amendment, consciousness, self-determination, and individual autonomy, the pursuit of happiness, inconsistent with America's economic system and America's political and social ethics.
All right. Thank you, Robert. That was your 30 seconds. Well done. I swear to God, Robert is the movie phone guy. He's so the movie phone guy. If not, he definitely has a career in robocalls. Thanks, Robert. I appreciate it. Can I get in both? I'm going to try. Tim, go for it. You got 30 seconds. Tim from Tustin.
Hi there. Comey had time to give an excuse to cover his ass. The two answers he gave, he just sounds incompetent. In addition, they had damaging information on the Republicans, as well as the Democrats before the election. Why didn't they stop the election? And any Trump spin and lies in, except with Mrs. Clinton accepting the blame, you know, would you ever hear Trump accept any blame?
No, he never accepts any blame because, as you know, Tim, he never does anything wrong. Last one, our champion, Morris from Long Beach. Oh, we just missed Morris. He just hung up as I went to him. Either that or I hung up on him. Sorry, Morris. We'll try again next week. My thanks to our producer, as usual, Desi Doyen, to our board operator today, Kiana Williams. Thank you, Kiana. Good to see you. And to you for spending a portion of your day or night with us. If you missed any portion of today's show, you can download it anytime for free at bradblog.com. Thanks to all of the callers today. Tune in tomorrow. We've got some interesting stories coming up, as I mentioned, on the Georgia special election, on some amazing voting stuff going on in Maricopa. That's coming up in the next day or two on the broadcast. All right, that's it. Until we meet again. Oh, you can drop me email, bradcast@bradblog.com, and on the Facebooks and the Twitters, I am The Brad Blog. That is it. I'm Brad Friedman. Good luck, world.